Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. There's been a huge explosion in the popularity of barbecue and smoked foods, and my guest today is an award-winning cookbook author, PBS host, and Barbecue Hall of Famer, Stephen Reichlin. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Barbecue Bible, but his latest project looks at a range of smoking techniques, from barbecue to cold smoking and high-heat roasting smoking. Project Smoke is Reichlin's new television project, which begins its second season this Saturday at 3:30 on RSU Television, along with the publication of a new book, Project Smoke, Seven Steps to Smoked Foods Nirvana, which offers a variety of ways to smoke meats, poultry, and seafood, along with vegetables, eggs, cheese, desserts, beverages, and cocktails. You'll be in Tulsa today for a couple of fundraising events for RSU Television, which are already sold out, but there will be a public book signing at 12:30 today at the Hasty Bake Grill store at 1313 South Lewis. He joins us today by phone. Stephen Reichlin, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Yeah, this project that you've been involved with the television series and now the new book, Project Smoke, what was the impetus behind this particular series? It seems like, from looking at the book, it's saying you can smoke nearly anything.
Well, you know, this is true. And I, of course, have touched on smoking, in particular as it relates to barbecue, true barbecue, in many of my previous books and TV shows. But I never really focused on smoking as a technique, as a cluster of techniques, and as a culture. And I guess sort of the trigger phrase for me, because, you know, with all of my books, there tends to be a trigger phrase that sort of sets me writing. It's that all barbecue is smoked, but not all smoked foods are barbecue. So, I mean, if you think about that for a minute, well, brisket, ribs, pork shoulders are all smoked. But, in fact, foods like smoked salmon, smoked cheese, even bacon are smoked, but they're not barbecue. So, you know, this kind of set me thinking that, gee, there's an important message here.
And, of course, there's a variety of techniques of smoking. There's your traditional barbecue technique, which is a pretty warm fire around 225, 250. But you're talking about cold smoking. You're talking about real long periods of time smoking where you may smoke for days, really.
Well, that is one extreme. Another extreme that is often overlooked is what I call smoke roasting, where you smoke at a high temperature between 350 and 400 degrees. And this is very useful for smoking poultry, smoking a chicken or turkey, where you want to not only smoke the meat, but you want to crisp the skin. You know, the traditional curse of a barbecue chicken is it has a great flavor, but the skin comes out really rubbery.
Yeah. Well, in the course of the book, you lay out seven steps for people interested in smoking. What are those seven steps?
Well, first of all, buying your smoker. Second of all, assembling the equipment. Third of all, assembling the initial flavorings, because remember, most smoked foods are, in addition, flavored with a rub, flavored with a marinade or a brine. They may be mopped with a mop sauce during cooking. They may be served with a barbecue sauce afterwards. Number four is actually selecting the meat. And here I differ a little bit from traditional barbecue in that I'm a very big advocate of using grass-fed beef, organic poultry, heritage varieties of pork, wild salmon, organic vegetables. You know, sort of my feeling is that where your food comes from and how it's raised matters as much as how you smoke it.
Now, do you see any differences in how you prepare say a smoked meat when it's grass-fed beef as opposed to your traditional feedlot beef where, you know, there's all sorts of marbling? We always think of grass-fed beef as being leaner.
Well, you're absolutely right, and grass-fed beef does require a shorter smoking time. Sometimes I'll drape it with bacon in order to add some more fat to it. Sometimes I'll wrap it in butcher paper part of the way through to add more moisture. You can place a pan of water in the smoke chamber. You can spray ribs, for example, with apple cider. I mean, these are all techniques for adding moisture, keeping those grass-fed and organic meats nice and moist during the cooking process.
Well, in your seven steps, the first thing is to choose your smoker. And what, you know, there's the traditional Weber kettle charcoaler, the ceramic cookers, the charcoal grills, the barrel smokers, the water smokers, the offset smokers. That's the sort of stick where the firebox is on the side. You actually have a design for a home-built smokehouse, which I assume is like for fish and cold smoking and that like.
Yeah, it is. And when I when I was about 6 months into the book, I said to myself, you know what? I have to build a smokehouse because, if I'm going to talk the talk, I want to walk the walk. And we really have fun with that smokehouse. It's we have it up on Chappaquiddick Island in Martha's Vineyard, and I've used it to smoke everything from fish to all sorts of condiments, mayonnaise, mustard, ketchup, hot sauce, flour, sour cream, heavy cream. The truth is that there's almost no limit to what you can smoke.
and I assume that smokehouse, was it a hard learning curve to figure out how to get the foods right with that?
Yeah. Interestingly, the biggest challenge is how to keep the fire going in the smokehouse. and that's involved with airflow. I actually use three different systems in the smokehouse. So, one is just the burning log. Two is I have a smoke generator, which is a metal cylinder that you place a lit charcoal briquette at the bottom, and then you fill it with wood chips. And there's a little fan that actually pumps the smoke into the smokehouse. That is great for cold smoking. Like I'll do a two-day smoke on smoked salmon and cold smoked salmon, and that smoke generator it works wonders. And then I also have a pellet smoker attachment that hooks up to it. So these things are really, once you get going with them, they're pretty versatile.
Now, there was one new to me that I'd never ever heard of, a handheld smoker. And you actually use this in drinks at the end of the book, like smoked drinks.
Yeah,
like
and not
cocktails.
Only that, but I've been on tour for about 5 weeks, and that is a great tool for morning television when you're in a studio and you can't light a grill. What it looks like, there's one that's called a smoking gun. There's another that's called an Aladdin. And the smoking gun looks like a pistol, and you put hardwood sawdust, like hickory sawdust, in at one end. You light it. There's a blower that blows the smoke out through a rubber tube. So to use a handheld smoker to make a cocktail, you might prepare the cocktail in the smoker or pitcher, cover the top with plastic wrap, insert that hose, fill the pitcher up with smoke, recover it, and then just let that smoke infuse in the liquid for 4 or 5 minutes. Another fun thing to do is to smoke mayonnaise. And smoked mayonnaise, it may sound crazy, but I want to tell you there is no better bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich on the planet than one made with smoked mayonnaise. For that, the mayonnaise goes in a bottom of a bowl of rice. You cover the mayonnaise bowl with plastic wrap, pump in the wood smoke, let it sit for 4 or 5 minutes again to infuse in the mayonnaise. It will give you a haunting, like a spectacular flavor.
Now, that reminds me of some of the recipes in this book for like smoked eggs, a hard-boiled deviled eggs, or quail eggs. And the secret is very interesting, is you put a load of ice well below the eggs so that the whites just don't... I would think that the egg would just become runny with lots of high heat.
Well, the situation, you start with hard-boiled eggs, okay?
Yeah.
And if you work at a high heat, the white becomes very rubbery, leathery and rubbery. So what I figured out is if you place the hard-boiled eggs on a wire rack over a pan of ice, you keep the ambient temperature cool, and in effect what you're doing is a cold smoke on the eggs.
Mm.
Very effective.
Yeah. Now, after you choose your smoker, or your way of delivering smoke, you got to choose your fuel, and of course there's all sorts of woods out there available, but what I was really struck was by some of the unusual materials that people smoke with. For example, there's a recipe for hamburgers that uses hay.
Hay smoking is very popular in Italy, where it's used to smoke mozzarella and scamorza cheese. The beauty of hay smoking, you get a dense cloud of smoke very quickly with very little temperature. So something like cheese, where you don't want it to melt, perfect for hay smoking. Hamburger, for quite a different reason, you smoke the raw meat, and you want that meat to stay cold, the raw patty. So, again, hay smoking, it's a great way to smoke without introducing a lot of heat. You keep the burgers cold over ice, and then once the patty is smoked, you grill it, so you get kind of the best of the grilled world and the smoky barbecue world.
And the other thing you talk about in your fuel situation is a wonderful science lesson on how smoke is made, what smoke imparts at various temperatures. You know, once wood or charcoal, especially charcoal, it gets to a certain heat, it's no longer providing any, and charcoal puts out very little smoke flavor to begin with. But
yeah, that's a common misconception that there is such a thing as a charcoal flavor, and what it is that high dry heat gives you, caramelizes the meat proteins in a very distinctive way. Unlike propane, working on a propane grill, for example, where that's a wetter kind of heat, so you don't get as much caramelization. And then the meat juices dripping on the charcoal, and coming back up as volatile gases. But smoke contains hundreds, literally hundreds of different flavor-producing compounds. One of them are carbonyls, which are responsible for that sort of mahogany color in wood smoke and kind of a slightly acidic taste. Another is vanillin, which we associate vanilla, and it gives smoked foods that sort of vanilla-like sweetness.
And in fact, there's a perfect medium for the temperature you want this smoke to go at, because too hot, it can be sort of giving you a tar, a blackened taste, sort
yep.
of a sooty taste.
Too yep.
low, and it's not the best flavor as well. It's sort of, there's a perfect medium. What is that perfect medium?
Well, it depends on your fuel, but in general, it's about 500 degrees. But what you're looking at is, look at the smoke. And if the smoke, at the very beginning when you light a grill, the smoke will be white. And that's kind of harsh flavor-producing compounds. And at a certain point, especially if you use green wood, your smoke will come out black, which has a lot of soot and tar in it. What you're looking for is kind of a pale blue color, almost translucent. That is your smoking sweet spot.
Yeah, and I assume a common mistake is as soon as you put the smoke element in, putting the meat on the grill, you want to let that smoke sort of settle first, right?
Absolutely. Get a nice stream of smoke flowing. But then you have to continue to keep the smoke flowing. So if you're using wood chips, I like to soak them. That slows down the rate of combustion. But, you know, you will need to refuel your grill every 30 to 40 minutes. Chunks, maybe every 40 minutes to hour. And if you're working with a large, what's called stick burner, offset barrel smoker, you'll use 2 or 3 logs per hour.
Yeah. Now, the next area is your tools. And this is the thing with the popularity of barbecuing and smoking now is there is just a whole wealth of technology out there to help backyard barbecuers. What would you say the most important tools that a guy working his backyard smoking food needs to have?
Well, the first are fairly low-tech, and they would be like a set of long-handled spring-loaded tongs, a set of suede gloves that come up past the elbow to protect your hands when handling hot chimneys. Chimney starter is useful for lighting your coals. Grill hoe is useful for raking out the coals. Grill brush, for cleaning the grill grate. But then there are a number of electronic devices that are super helpful. Absolutely essential is an instant read meat thermometer. Many of these are digital, and more of them are wireless. Like Maverick makes a system that has one probe that clips to the grill or smoker grate, so you can measure the ambient temperature of the smoker. Another probe goes into the center of the meat, so you can check the internal temperature of the meat. That's very important. And then this is actually broadcast to a separate monitor that you might take indoors, or some of these units even speak with your cell phone. It's sort of the myth of barbecue is that, the seasoned pitmaster who eyeballs everything and just judges the doneness by touch. But if you're working at home, particularly if you're new to the game, accurately checking internal temperatures is very important.
Now, you do have some of those subjective tests, like the jiggle test for brisket.
Yeah.
What's the jiggle test?
So you poke a brisket that's been cooking, let's say, 12 or 14 hours, particularly if it's loaded with fat, and it'll sort of jiggle. Or some people call it the accordion effect. You pull it sort of shrinks back. And that has to do with that massive amounts of fat and liquid in a brisket that become gelatinized when a brisket is properly smoked.
And then for others, especially like your pork shoulders or pork butts, grab the end of the blade bone, right?
Grab the end of the blade bone and pull it out. If it comes out easily, that's a good test for doneness. Again, I use an internal temperature, instant read meat thermometer to judge the internal temperature. And what you're looking for is one of my 10 commandments of smoking is to overcook your meat. And for certain cuts like brisket or pork shoulders, you want to be in that 200-degree internal temperature range. That's when you get the maximum gelatinization of the fat, maximum tenderness in the muscle meat. But you have to get there slowly. That's the whole key with brisket. If you try and rush it, you wind up with a mouthful of shoe leather.
My guest today is Stephen Reichlin, master barbecuer, griller, and PBS show host. His new book, Project Smoke, that also follows along with a TV series, which will begin its second season this Saturday at 3:30 on RSU Public TV. He's in town today for two events benefiting RSU. And in fact, there'll be a book signing at 12:30 at the Hasty Bake store on South Lewis that gets underway at 12:30 today. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, in your book, there's all sorts of things, and I should mention the Tulsa Torpedo, as you refer to it, at Burn Company. You talk to a number of great barbecue chefs and smoking chefs around the world, really, and within it you have what you call the Tulsa Torpedo. I think there's another name for it at Burn Company.
They call it the Fatty.
The Fatty.
Yeah.
And what was your first reaction upon finding the Fatty?
I mean, first of all, I was, oh, my God, they couldn't really do that. And now you have to envision, this is a log of pork sausage that is stuffed with a smoked garlic sausage and rounds of hot link sausage. And into that mixture, you grate pepper jack cheese. And then the whole thing is wrapped in a bacon weave, and it's smoked. So we are talking about so many calories and so much cholesterol that I don't know that there's enough Lipitor in the city of Tulsa to counteract it. But when I tasted this thing, I mean, I felt like I could feel the skies open and the angels sing Hosanna.
So your first reaction was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to eat this, but it tastes great, right?
First reaction was, I can't believe we're going to eat this. And then the second reaction is, I can't believe I can't stop.
Yeah. Of course, one of the cool things in the book is things that we would normally just buy. You have recipes for how to smoke them. One is like there's a great pastrami recipe in there to make your own smoked pastrami. What's the secret for pastrami?
Well, one secret for pastrami is you need to use a curing salt. The scientific name is sodium nitrate. Often it's sold as either pink salt or prog powder. Sort of a couple of decades ago, there was some hysteria about sodium nitrite. It's a naturally occurring compound that's actually, believe it or not, found in broccoli, high amounts in broccoli and spinach. And it's what gives you that iridescent pinkish-red color that we associate with pastrami. It also has a very umami-like kind of hammy flavors that make pastrami taste so remarkable. But pastrami, bacon, beef jerky, these are three foods that we're accustomed to buying pre-prepared. When you make them at home, they're not difficult. And the flavor, it's just flavors off the charts. And the satisfaction of actually making them from scratch is really remarkable.
I should mention, there's a recipe for a smokehouse shoulder ham, too. And I guess my question about all those is those meats, you have people who have been specializing in making those meats for an awful long time. And to get to that level of knowledge, why bother with, say, smoking your own hams as opposed to going to a business that's been smoking them for a couple generations?
Well, many reasons. I mean, first of all, a lot of hams, especially inexpensive hams, are actually ham-like products where water might be injected into the meat where they might actually cut up different muscles and bind them in a net together. So it's sort of more a spam-like product than a ham-like product. When you smoke your own ham, you can control the cut and quality of the meat. And one, you know, we talked about the message of where your food comes from matters as much as how you smoke it. Well, one variety of pork I like to use is Berkshire or Duroc or Mongolica. These are so-called heritage breeds that were raised 100 years ago for flavor rather than for just pure meat output. So if you smoke a Berkshire ham, it's going to have a heck of a lot more flavor than your average supermarket ham. Finally, there's just the pleasure and satisfaction of doing it. I mean, it's so cool. I remember the first time I smoked bacon, you know, I made my own bacon. I thought, wow, you know, I actually made my own bacon. How cool is this? With pastrami, you know, normally we buy it sliced, we buy it cold. But when you pull a hot pastrami off, it's like the best of the deli world and the best of the barbecued brisket world.
Now, I was also struck by some of the desserts in here where you smoke like a, oh gosh, like a bacon bourbon apple crisp.
That's a real popular one.
This looks really gorgeous. I mean, this picture is the best example of food porn I've ever seen.
That's a goodie. Adding a pinch of salt to caramel, for example, or chocolate or many desserts, it's a way to bring out the sweetness. And bacon does that, of course. But then I also smoke roast the crisp in a smoker. And that smoke flavor, I don't know, man, there's something about smoke and sugar that it makes desserts taste so great, like the smoked cheesecakes, for example, or the smoked ice cream, I guess, is the ultimate example. I mean, ice cream, something we eat, you know, once a week for our whole lives. And when you taste it smoke, it gets these campfire toasted marshmallow nuances that just make you feel like you're discovering ice cream for the first time.
Hmm. One of the things is you have a number of techniques in there, and one that was new to me was reverse searing. You were talking about chicken earlier, and of course, one way to do chicken is to do a very quick sear on the skin and then turn down the heat and let it cook. That's the way I've always done chicken to make it tender and juicy on the inside, but that get that crisp skin on the outside. But you use a technique called reverse searing, and it's especially for cuts of meat like tri-tips and things like that.
And even steak.
How do you do reverse searing?
In reverse searing, you kind of, traditionally, what do? You sear a piece of meat over a high heat, and then you move it to a lower heat and let it cook through. In reverse searing, you actually smoke it low and slow, low temperature for a relatively long time, to cook it to about 110 degrees, which is, you know, maybe 15 to 25 degrees shy of where you want it to be. Advantage of that, it infuses the meat with a terrific smoke flavor, which is something you don't normally associate with, let's say, steak or tri-tip. And it cooks the meat through evenly. You don't get that bullseye that you often get when you grill a thick steak. And then at the last minute, you rake the coals together. You direct grill the steak over a high heat, putting on the crust, putting on the sear, that smoky, caramelized meat protein flavor. But you've done the whole process in reverse, so it's much easier to get the steak to the desired doneness and temperature that you want. It takes the split-second timing out of cooking a steak.
Now, as you were researching the book, and I know that, you know, you're like the guy that goes around everywhere learning new techniques, were there new techniques that you came up with that you discovered through the process of this book in the series?
Well, absolutely. And one technique is an Asian technique. It's called tea smoking. And in China, what they do is they smoke duck over a mixture of black tea, rice, brown sugar, cinnamon, and tangerine peel. A very fragrant, aromatic smoke, but utterly unlike any smoke that we use in the West. Another technique that I learned during my travels, hay smoking, use it all the time for smoking cheese. I'll use it to smoke a steak. I'll use it to smoke burgers. It's a very quick smoking method.
Now, the hay, I was going to go back to the hay smoking because it sounds like, you know, it's gonna smell like a grass fire.
Yeah, but it really doesn't. It's a light flavor. It's not exactly like a wood flavor, but it's a very very pleasant flavor. It harmonizes with the kind of milky sweetness of a fresh mozzarella very nicely.
Now, when you were talking about the tea smoked duck, it's from all the different ingredients, you know, with the rice, the loose black tea, the sugar, the anise, the cinnamon sticks, it would seem like it would be difficult to get the blend right. Is that the secret to it?
It took a little while tinkering with the proportions, but if you follow what's in the book, it works great. One thing I do that's a little bit different, now when the Chinese tea smoke, they are smoking pieces of duck in a wok, and I like to smoke a whole bird, so I do actually add some cherry wood chips to that mixture just to give the smoke a little bit more strength and a little bit more longevity.
For the most part, now I know you've tested your recipes over and over, but can you give us a sense of what the timeline is in getting the recipe down? Is there a lot of trial and error, a little trial and error? What do you find?
Well, here's my process. First of all, I write the recipe first, and then I cook it, and I sort of tinker with it to get it to where I think it's right. But then, and this is the most important thing in my process, I have a test kitchen, I bring a team of independent testers in, and they test the recipes. I'm not in the kitchen when they're actually being tested, but I'm at a table next door, and when the food comes off the smoker, I taste it. And I do this because we cookbook authors, you know, we tend to sort of fudge when we're making recipes, and we can make them work, because subconsciously you want them to work. But when you get an independent person doing it, not only will they let you know whether you're accurate or not, but they can let you know, you know, as an average cook would, well, gee, this instruction is confusing, or this process is, it takes a little longer, or you may know how to tell when it's done, but how do you make the novice to smoking know when it's done?
And one of the things I know on all your recipes, you tell them what the best type of way to smoke the meat is on the, you know, like a... For example, I'm looking at your made-from-scratch bacon. You say electric smokers work great for bacon, and then other ways might not work so well. And there are adjustments in there for when you're trying to smoke the meat with various different types of equipment. Do you test different equipment for the recipe?
I sure do. And that's, you know, that's in a sense why what made this book a complicated book to write. Because if you think about it, sort of a grill is a grill is a grill, and whether you're working on gas or charcoal or wood, a grill operates in a pretty similar fashion. Whereas smokers, you know, a ceramic cooker, you set it up completely differently than you would a stick burner or you would an electric smoker, a handheld smoker. So in many instances, we would do the same recipe five different times on different smokers.
Well, I know the new season starts this Saturday on RSU Public TV. In the second season, I think you're featuring more exotic recipes. I think the first season was more of the basics. What's that coming up in the second season?
Well, in the second season, we really tried to push the envelope. So, for example, there's a show on smoking in a hurry, where all the dishes can be smoked in 10 minutes or less. Obviously, in a world of American barbecue where you cook low and slow, this is pretty revolutionary. Another show focuses on, it's called Rise and Smoke, and it focuses on smoked breakfasts. Let's see, we make a fire roasted and smoked sangria. There's a smoked chocolate bread pudding. In other words, there are a lot of dishes that you wouldn't expect to smoke.
All right. Well, Stephen Reichlin, I appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Barbecue Hall of Famer Stephen Reichlin speaking with us on Studio Tulsa. His new book is titled Project Smoke. That's also the name of his new television project, which begins its second season this Saturday at 3:30 on RSU Television. There'll be a book signing today at 12:30 at the Hasty Bake Grill Store at 1313 South Lewis. You can learn more about his work at barbecuebible.com. That's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher.